Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost an hour. Entering the show cold, as happens sometimes with technical difficulties. I apologize. So hopefully we'll get that squared away here in a moment. The show today, we will be joined by Father Tom Truman, who joins us once a month to talk about the interesting things that happen within our Catholic Church, and then seems to affect many global trends as well, so we'll get into that. Also, just found this story, haven't had time to dig into it, but I find it interesting, so hopefully we'll at least discuss it briefly. Oklahoma legislature passes bill to criminalize abortion. We'll see what this is all about. As we know, there's been interesting movement on the state level, one in particular, the Texas case, which is now before the Supreme Court. What will happen there? And so as we see these things just kind of continue to crop up on the states, how do you deal with this opposition from a federal level, right? So it's very interesting. I think we talked a little bit about how there's really very little hope from a legislative standpoint when it comes to, a judicial standpoint when it comes to the Supreme Court. We can't really trust that. But what will happen if enough states continue to do things of this nature? We'll get into that. And many, many other things to discuss, like the big Donald Trump, Megyn Kelly war, which continues to rage, apparently. We'll discuss all of that and more this afternoon. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to Bless the Yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Getting a Skype alert there as we came into the show. Forgive me for that. I think we're trying to try for the Tom Truman. We may have him join us in the show if we're able to get to him here sooner than later. We'll see what happens. Welcome back. Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith. That's what we do for 50 minutes every afternoon here. And lots of current events, as always, every day to discuss. First, I want to say our hearts and prayers go out to the victims of this Egypt aircraft that crashed into the Mediterranean in the wee hours of the morning, and the unfortunate reality that regardless of cause, that is, but as it appears, they're naturally assuming some sort of terrorist activity, which adds even more challenge to this already challenging situation. So, again, prayers to the victims and their families, and a very difficult situation as they apparently have found the wreckage. They are beginning to search the area and perhaps find a cause and perhaps some responsible individual group or individuals in this. So, again, prayers for those that in this unfortunate situation. I mentioned this a moment ago as we got into the show, and literally it just came across my news feed, so I really haven't had time to dig into it. But nonetheless, I think we can talk about it because we've seen other legislation of this nature, maybe not quite in this situation, but in some, on the state level, things that are happening to curb abortion and maybe try to change a dynamic when it comes to what we're dealing with there. Do we have Father? Okay, well, we'll get back to this in just a moment. Father Tom Truman with us. Father, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing good. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you on a beautiful day like today.
Yeah, is it, do you guys have sunshine out in Arizona, or are you in Arizona today?
Yeah, well, I'm in Arizona. I'm in Tucson. I just finished meeting with a bunch of priests here in the diocese, so I'm just walking out the door.
All right, good deal. And what were you guys talking about?
Oh, just the end. For us, we call this the end of the year kind of thing because everything quiets down. The snowbirds have gone.
Right.
The schools are breaking. The university's closed.
Right.
So we've become a ghost town for about 2 months.
I got you. So this is when you guys can get things done when there's not a lot of other activity to have to attend to.
That's right. It's when everybody has their vacations and they all escape.
Exactly. Beat the heat. Get out of Tucson.
That's right. That's right.
So I know we talked extensively the last time we had you talking about Amoris Laetitia and,
right.
of course, we've seen some other interesting developments from our Holy Father, like this mm-hmm. willingness to explore deaconesses, I guess is how you'd say it. And this has ruffled some feathers, not surprisingly.
Oh, yeah. People who don't want the world to change always get ruffled by those things. But, you know, I think he's challenging us to at least rethink what that ministry is.
Right.
I don't know where he's going to go with it. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I was really kind of taken aback when I heard it, too.
Well,
it was quite a shock.
But there is evidence, as we know, there's scriptural mm-hmm. references to these women known as the deaconess, and they were obviously doing something in the early church. There's been those who said, well, they were necessary because of the baptism and helping women prepare and or change, or maybe baptism was nude.
Right.
I've heard all kinds of interesting dynamics there. But the real question is there anything wrong with this? Is there any reason why this couldn't take
place?
Well,
that's what the commission is meeting to find out. You know, what does the tradition tell us, and how does it speak to us about all of that, and what does that mean? So
I think it's going to be fascinating to see what they come up with.
Yeah. Well, and I think that for those who would want to point fingers at the Catholic Church for being anti-woman or misogynistic, the simple fact that we have a Holy Father saying, hey, let's examine this and let's at least take a look at it, that's got to be refreshing for those individuals.
No, I think it should be, and I think we always need to do that because I think we too oftentimes assume that, well, things were just always done this way, period, forever and ever. And oftentimes the facts are it wasn't.
Right.
And of course, it's interesting having women in that time being deaconesses when women had no rights whatsoever.
Right.
You know, I mean, even in the Roman Empire, they couldn't even have a name sometimes.
Wow.
It was really very, very brutal. And to have deaconesses like that operating was, if that's true, it would be pretty amazing what was going on there. Because I've always contended the church was founded really in many ways by women
who were
willing to take the risk that the guys weren't willing to do.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I mean,
guys hide in the room. The women are out there doing the job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you simply look at the role of women in the scriptures, we see, of course, the woman at the well being amazingly instrumental in evangelization. Mary Magdalene in a very similar fashion, especially when it comes to spreading
That's
the
right.
news of the resurrection. And of course, as Catholics, we have our Blessed Mother, who is the role model for us all
right.
to be receptive to the will of God and to Christ's love in our hearts. So,
right.
you know, it's,
there you have it.
We've got a lot of evidence on our side that says that we're far from anti-woman.
I think so, too. I think we've just really struggled with what that role means, and, you know, we still are, you know, because, of course, the role of women in the history, just in society has, you know, when I was a child, women were very restricted in what they could do compared to today, where we have full professional communities and things of that sort. That is just a very different reality than we had then, and the church is still struggling, I think, to deal with that, and what does that mean? But, you know, you go to a diocese like ours, the chancellor's a woman.
Mm.
Most of the experts in all the various fields and at the chancery are run by women, whether it's in compliance or other types of things like that.
Sure.
And that's just standard procedure now. And so I think you see those roles, and it isn't just being taken by sisters.
Exactly.
It's being taken by lay women who are very involved and highly professional and I think that's probably the way it should be. And we're seeing the benefits of that. That's really enriched the life of the church. And we have to be aware of that. So I think he's recognizing that there was probably this kind of a role in there that maybe just kind of got lost because of the, you know, the prejudices or whatever of millennia and the many centuries that went by and what the role of women were in society, really, until really recent history.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating to consider, and I think that when you think about what the role of the deacon is, at least with a limited degree of holy orders, right? I mean, there are certain...
Right, and of course, we didn't even start the diaconate back until... really after Vatican II, it was really kind of died out. It was really a transitional thing for men preparing for the priesthood.
Right.
And all of a sudden now we're seeing a, you know, I can't imagine a parish without a, at least where I've been, without a deacon now.
Exactly.
And doing very, very integral things and very important ministries and outreach. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in our diocese, I think that, well, we have an exponential growth rate of deacons, right? Because every 5 years, we've got another batch of 30 or so. So, yeah, so we've been seeing that for the past 20-some-odd years.
Wow, and, yeah, we haven't had quite that strong here, but we have, like at my parish, we have two wonderful deacons that have just been wonderful witnesses of what this is about. So having women deacons could be very interesting new addition, and we'll have to see what the Holy Father comes up with on that.
Well, I say the first batch should be the wives of the deacons who've had to go through all of the deacon training.
Yeah, I would think so. That would be an easy one. And they go for a refresher course, and you got it.
Yeah, they've basically had the same education that their husbands have had, but without the ordination.
In very, very many ways, and they most certainly know what so many people are going through because of what they... They're oftentimes the wives are very involved in ministry anyway.
Exactly.
I know the wives that we have are both very involved in ministry, whether it's education or whatever it may be. It's just part of the DNA of the family. So you see that all the time.
Well, the unfortunate thing that I've seen, and you know that this is out there, when our Holy Father makes a statement of this nature and says, oh, okay, well, let's look at this, then there are those who just immediately criticize our Pope and think that, well, this is the most anti-Catholic thing that someone could do, is even consider something of this nature. And we've got an unfortunate big batch of individuals who are more Catholic than the Pope, especially this Pope.
Well, they all think that, you know, well, and again, you have a group of people who... And I think part of it is, I think everybody wants to hold on to something that doesn't change. That,
right.
That's like an anchor that you can say, you know, in this vastly changing world where all these assumptions are all of a sudden now null and void. All of this sort of stuff. We want to go back to something that we want to hang on to. We want to do this and that. And I think churches in particular are caught in that game more than others because they kind of represent a stability that oftentimes we don't see around here. And I think they see this as a threat to stability and what that means for them personally or whatever. But the history of the church has always been about change. Right. It has never not been. We wouldn't be here today if we were not about change. But going slow with it, meditating on it very carefully and doing our best. But the Vatican II was a radical moment of great change. It was an earthquake in many ways, but it was but obviously when you look back at the history of it, thank God we had it. Who of us would be here today if we hadn't had that?
Well, the one thing that I often say is, you know, there are those who want to hold on to these type of traditions, and I understand it's, you know, there is something about that desire to have the stability. But, you know, one group would be those who want to go back to a 1962 missal, and I'm saying, well, something changed in 1962.
I hate to say this, there are those who have rejected everything that happened.
Hey, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. Hang tight there,
right,
Father. We'll be right back. Father Tom Truman, more to come. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost an Hour. culture, current events, our Catholic faith. We discuss that for 15 minutes every afternoon. Father Tom Herman joins us once a month to talk about the global trends and the things that are happening that are affecting the church. Welcome back, Father. How are you?
Good to be back. Thank you.
We're talking about the role of women and where this could go, and I think that we know, as you mentioned a moment ago, the church turns very slowly, so let's say that there is a commission established to begin exploration of this women deacon concept. It still could be years before we see anything
come of it. Oh, it could very well be years, and they would want to consult with the different parts of the world. See, that's one of the challenges we also have. You have different cultural realities in the world. And that affects a lot of things. And we saw it in the whole thing on marriage. I mean, just the debates and the things that went on, a lot of it was because of the cultural backgrounds that people bring with them and that kind of baggage. And how does that interact with the life of the church and the communities that they're in?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean for West maybe to pushing and advancing an idea that makes total sense to them, but to another part of the world where there's hunger and poverty and other things which are big different issues than maybe the West is dealing with, well, that doesn't make sense for us because of what we're dealing with. And so you get into all of these debates, and that's what you try to do, is to try to work it out and hear it out and see what it says. And that's what those gatherings are all about, and trying to put your best sense forward on it. And what does that mean now with the massive shortage of clergy and other things that's happening? I mean, it's going to get much worse. It's not going to get better. You know, maybe this is the opportune time that the Pope is seeing that we need to really bring up this subject.
Right. And as you say, the challenges that come when into other cultures, we talked a moment ago about the prominent role that women are already playing, certainly in the church in the U.S., especially in the you made references to the diocesan office. The same is true here in our diocese. We have a female chancellor, and many of the positions within the diocese are run by women. And but that's not the case in every culture. There's still challenges in other places.
That's right. If you go to to where I used to do mission work in Tanzania, you know, the role of women is incredibly different.
Hmm.
And, you know, they have a much tougher situation there that they're dealing with for their own equality in society and everything else. And, you know, the church doesn't live in a vacuum. It has to deal with those realities and how you struggle with that and what that says to you as a faith community. And the answer sometimes comes out a little differently. So, you know, how to balance that has always been a challenge in the life of the church. That's because I think some people think here in the West, the United States, oh, you know, we're the center of the universe.
And,
well, we're not, actually. We really aren't. You know, we are not. And, we have our issues, definitely, but they're very different than when, for instance, when you cross the border. The issues of church down there is very different than they are on this side of the border. And what does that mean? And how do you deal with those realities? And how do we look at each other and dialogue with that sort of stuff? That's one thing our bishop here has been in deep dialogue with the new bishop in Nogales, Sonora, across the border. And here are just two very different worlds right next to each other. And yet, how does the church respond and deal with those issues? And, of course, that's one of our geniuses, too. We've always been good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but you're right when we start thinking about this, that we have such a myopic view, right? We're in our culture. We barely really understand our own culture.
And you see, the problem is then that's where you get to the dysfunction, you get to the alienation. We're seeing all of those terms now being used in our politics and everything else. I think it's one of the reasons it's so nasty. And, you know, we look at the world as only from this very myopic view. And no, there's many viewpoints that you have to take into account and deal with problems. And it's not either right or wrong, this or that. You know, in the life of the church and life of society, there are many things that have to come to bear if you want to actually function and be successful. And it's a real challenge for us. It's part of the displacement. It's part of the massive changes we've seen in such a short period of time. And, you know, and so this dialogue that the Pope is inviting us into is really part of that, and saying, how do we put reason and how do we put a theology and faith in the middle of a conversation when we got so many things going on at one time? So many people are being displaced and emotionally and culturally and other ways that need to be addressed.
And then, like you say, we have this very unfortunate view of our world and kind of what we can only see day to day. And then we put this overlay on something that we don't understand anyway, which is the globalization and the true universality, which basically says this church is designed to fit everywhere, right?
Well, and, yeah, we are the first globalized organization.
Right.
I mean, we are. You know, when you talk about globalization, you know, we think of economics. Well, the church has been globalized for centuries.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, so we're, you know, we're kind of good at it. We kind of know what we're doing on that in a way that others don't. Because I'll be honest with you, you know, it's the fear and the provincialism that really destroys in the end. You know, it's the wall buildings that really ultimately destroy, and it never works in the first place, never has, never will. And, you know, I see it every time, like when I'm going out of the country to visit church, like in Guatemala, I'm going to be doing that in July and everything. And I come back here and it's like, well, what planet are we on here? It's just utterly different from anybody else you see. And it's like, okay, we got a problem here.
Yeah.
We really do.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's also reflected in church. It's reflected in a lot of other things. It's not something that's just one little space at that. It's a huge, huge problem. And it affects our health. It affects our ability to grow. It affects our spirituality. It affects a lot of different things. So it's not something that's just one point centered. And so I can see people who are upset. You know, the one thing that they want to see staying firm and safe and never changing, the bedrock I can base everything on is my church, and all of a sudden this Pope is now looking at women for deacons. Oh, dear God, what am I going to do now? Is there no place to hide?
No.
I think that's part of it.
I've shared this before on the show. There's an interesting dynamic I've discovered recently in digging back through my Kindle books, right? Because it's one thing to look at your bookshelf and like, oh, I haven't read that book in a while, or oh, I started reading that. But I've discovered I'm doing the same thing in my Kindle now, because I don't know how many years I've been a Kindle user since it first emerged, right? I was an early adopter with the very first platform that they introduced.
And I remember, of course, that. Yeah, I had it for a while too.
And it had no backlight, right? It was just the reader. It was, had a keyboard that you could type things in, had its own kind of Wi-Fi connection that you could download things from the Kindle store,
right,
and all of this.
It was black and white. It was just like reading an old-fashioned book.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And the screen was very small. But I still have that unit. And for whatever reason, I was digging through this last night, and I found a book that I had bought some time ago, the sayings of or the writings of Confucius. I have to go back and look at this. But as I began to read into this, again, for the first time in some time, it's all about courtesy. I can't tell you the number of times courtesy is mentioned, right? And you talk about something we have forgotten. You talk about something this culture has abandoned. Courtesy.
Right.
Just common courtesy.
Right. And I think what has happened is we've gotten to this situation of my rights versus your rights until nobody has any rights.
Right, sure.
I mean, really, we're getting to that point where all you need is respect. You know, really, and the crudeness that we're seeing in our elections and everything else, and, you know, they say, well, we're getting rid of PC or whatever. That isn't about PC. It's just about human decency.
Yeah, exactly.
But we've now made human decency something immoral to even discuss. What is wrong is recognizing Christ in the other person, even though you may disagree with them.
Yeah.
Or you may have some real problems with them. That doesn't mean the person is evil or disgusting, or they look different or whatever. And I think that's, again, it's a part of this displacement. You have a lot, you know, you look at the polls, people are terrified of the ethnic and racial changes that are happening in this country on a really rapid level right now, and they're terrified of this stuff. So you're seeing a lot of reaction, and yet these are all children of God like you are. There's no difference.
Yeah.
There really isn't. I always laugh. I said, for some people, my church would terrify them, because it would be their worst nightmare, because we're so mixed.
Right.
And so, you look at that but you look at our young people, look at our kids, you know, and their teenage, they don't even know the difference.
So
they have literally gone so far beyond this fear and stuff that they just cannot conceive of what the problem is. It's really kind of amazing.
Which is hopeful, you know? Right? That is hopeful.
It's just exciting. It's exciting. I love to be with our young people.
Yeah.
They're so advanced from where we are.
And we pray that they don't become jaded haters when they get older. Right?
No, and I hope they don't either. I hope they don't make our mistakes. And, you know, and every generation as they get older, recognizes some of the mistakes that they made. And, you know, but I said, I think, you know, we've also had a lot of economic changes. So, you know, we're not the industrial nation we were before. And
right.
It's kind of like the, when you read back into the years of the Industrial Revolution, when the same thing happened, you had massive displacements of people forced from the farms into the cities, into the big factories, and, you know, the days of, you know, of that period and how rough it was and the bitterness and the hurt and the movements that created out of it now. And, you know, we're going through that period again, but this is where the church can really be a positive player. And yet, by showing people, how do you move in a world that's changing like that in a positive way?
Mm-hmm.
How can you see faith and care and community and those things shine forth at a time when people are so fearful and wondering what does work and what doesn't work and things of that sort? And the other thing, you know, we don't have in the United States anymore is community.
No.
You know, well, it's everybody's first, Father, and to heck with everybody else.
Well, as you bring that up, I gotta let you go because
okay.
We're running out of time. But all as right. always, great talking to you. Father Tom Truman, thank you so much.
All right, you have a great day, and we'll see you next month.
All right, thank you. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
Redbox Media invites you to bless the yes. Your designated parish, school, club, or nonprofit will receive 50% of all revenue from the sponsorships. To find out more about Bless the Yes, visit redboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you for joining us. Follow me over on Facebook, Leo C. Brown. I post many of the stories we talk about and many that we don't get a chance to talk about, but we'll do our best discussing things. I found this interesting from the Washington Post. I put this over on my Facebook page earlier today. Apparently, 9 out of 10 Native Americans have no problem with the Redskins name in Washington Redskins. So this has been a lot of unfortunate controversy trying to change the team name to something that would make sense, apparently, and not be offensive. But it turns out it's only offensive to those who are offended because they think someone might be offended who isn't, if that makes sense. So... what do you do? What do you do with that one? And as I was talking the other day about political correctness, yes, you can go too far. Obviously, you can go too far. But is there something about simply being correct? As I mentioned with Father Tom earlier, reading these writings of Confucius that basically are hinged upon courtesy. And you think about what that means, what courtesy means. I think it's a beautiful term. And the fact that we have almost all but lost all degrees of courteousness in our culture. Now, we look at the Asian culture, we see them bowing to one another as a sign of respect. You know, we barely acknowledge one another, right? I mean, this is the unfortunate reality. And we then, if you put a degree of separation like a mobile device or a computer screen between us, then all courtesy is gone. Not only is it no longer courteous, there's hostility that's going to come of that, right? So we can go a little bit too far. But I think, yes, sensitivity to the other individual, courteousness, undoubtedly, but sometimes fighting a fight for someone who doesn't have that fight, that's really taking it a little bit too far, which obviously what we see here with the Redskins. So I mentioned this a moment ago, put this over without a lot of research on it, but Oklahoma legislature passes bill criminalizing abortion. Apparently, this is going before the governor, and it looks like this could become law in Oklahoma. Outside of life of the mother, if abortion is performed, it looks like the criminal act is to the abortionist. Now, we know that Donald Trump had made the claim regarding women seeking abortions that seem to lump them into some sort of criminal compliance as well, and that is not what this does. So I think that that's one thing that's a distinction here. It doesn't criminalize the woman seeking the abortion. So we get the Texas legislation on the docket for the Supreme Court. We'll get a ruling on that sometime mid-year here. We'll see where that leads us. And now with Oklahoma making this what appears to be a pretty sure passage of this bill, where will this go when it comes to challenge, and where will it ultimately end up? But as I said earlier, this might be something that we're going to see a cycle of this kind of stuff for a while, right? And who knows what will happen on the state level that would then get challenged, that then turns into something that could eventually be some sort of unraveling, and maybe the way we have a return to the abortion being illegal in the U.S. That could absolutely happen. And as I said before, it really needs to come down to the unimaginable, right? Because there's another story that I posted. Patricia Heaton, who is an outspoken pro-life advocate, Everybody Loves Raymond, we remember her from that. And she apparently made a pro-life statement in a tweet, support life for everyone, something of this nature, which was just roundly responded with unfortunate, very terrible things said about this. Of course, it's a heated topic. And this is where we are, right? I mean, it's undoubtedly a confusing issue, but we want to create what I would hope that we could create as a culture where this is unfathomable, because we understand the dynamics of what we're talking about. We realize that this is dignity of human life. It's not a fertilized egg, and it's like cracking an egg for your breakfast, right? Maybe that's where we get this misnomer. Not sure. It's not that type of disposability. It is a human life with all the afforded dignity of everyone else. So eventually that's got to be decided. And it may be decided through legislation. It may be decided through judicial review and upholding a challenge to legislation. Time will tell. But I think that that's what it's ultimately got to come down to, is just a true realization, a decision that, yes, this is life. This is human life. This is a life that must be protected. So we'll see where it all goes, but it's an interesting time. Interesting time to watch these things develop. Speaking of watching things develop, a little crude and crass the way it's presented here. So I don't want to offend your sensitivities, but the Daily Show, Trevor Noah, apparently making some comments on the big fight, which was supposed to be fought out between Megyn Kelly and Donald Trump. They were hyping this as the be-all, end-all of whatever type of debate that there could be, and a bloodbath, as it was apparently presented. And he says it actually looks more like the couple's bath that you only see in Cialis commercials, right? And we all know what that looks like. We've seen the commercials, the two bathtubs on the beach with the couple holding hands between, which apparently only happens. That's the only place that ever happens, is in this commercial. So, but I did watch at least some of the excerpts of this, and wow, yeah, you're talking about going easy on somebody. I mean, both of them, right? Both of them just very, very courteous, back to my reference of being courteous to one another. So not what it was hyped to be. I'm glad, quite frankly, I guess you could say in a weird way, I'm glad it wasn't what it was. Because they did look like, at least in what I saw, they did look like sensible individuals. And even Donald Trump looked like a sensitive individual. And it kind of makes me wonder, is what his campaign has been saying, is this going to be the Donald Trump we see emerge in the general election, right? Are we going to see this much more reserved, much more controlled, because now he's got the nomination, he is who the right is going to vote for. So time will tell. Speaking of right versus left, Facebook, with this interesting congressional review of their tactics when it comes to conservative news being posted. And it's Glenn Beck, and I got to be honest, I'm no Glenn Beck fan. I was a Glenn Beck fan when he was on CNN, and I thought he had an interesting perspective. And then he kind of started getting very sensational and kind of just absurd with some of his allegations. And then, you know, I mean, he's found his niche. I mean, I get that. I know what he's doing. I know what he's going for, and I get his shtick. I'm not a fan of it. But I do appreciate the fact that he's willing to say, wait a minute, this is the Rainbow Coalition of conservatives coming in here to say, where's our rights for this company, which really has no obligation to be fair and balanced? That's not what they're doing. They're a communication platform, a social communication platform. That's what they do. He himself defending Facebook, saying, look, I got 3.5 million followers on Facebook. They're not censoring me. I put things out there all the time. So really interesting perspective from, I think, an unlikely advocate for Zuckerberg in this. So it's kind of childish and whiny to be worried about this, I think. I mean, anybody from any special interest, and yes, your political leaning is a special interest, you could declare some sort of unfairness. You could do that. You could try to say, well, why doesn't this outlet or that outlet do that? And it, as I said many times, when it comes to media, there are those who have biases and admit it, and those who have biases and don't. And that's the only difference. It's the only difference. You're not going to find a truly neutral organization anywhere, because guess what? They all have editors, right? They all have someone. They have a news director, or they have an editor. They have somebody who is saying, this goes and that doesn't. This passes the muster, and this won't. And they are all sponsor-driven. So, or they're donor-driven. Either way, they've got a fan base. They've got a base of followers that support them financially. That's how they are in business. And that's what they do. Now, what would you prefer? The alternative to that government run? I can't even say that without chuckling. Are you going to get a fair perspective there? Where do you draw the line in this, right? It's laughable, honestly. I mean, it's so comical to me to think we've got a government overview of a social media platform asking about their fairness and presenting more conservative-leaning stuff in their newsfeed. It's crazy. It's crazy, right? So, I mean, should Democrats get together and ask Fox News why there's not more left-leaning stuff? I don't even think Carollo's over there anymore, right? It used to be Hannity and Combs. Combs, well, he didn't make the cut, right? His ratings weren't there. That's all we have time for. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless you.